It's the motherfucking Millennial Miha podcast.
Welcome back to the Millennial Miha podcast. I'm here with my family, my brother in medicine words, my fellow performer, well, not a performer, you don't like that word. My fellow, what is it? What's the word that you like when you go up on the stage?
Pedorrin.
That's what it says in the
Pedorrin. That's what it should say
in your business card.
¿Verdad? I have a doctorate in pedos.
Period.
Forget all that stuff.
We're in a side room here currently at a conference, at the Colegas Conference in Long Beach, California.
Mm.
It is a conference of Latino educators, correct?
Yeah.
From around California, all of California. So they all gather to do workshops about what bringing empowerment to our students, or what is it that they're
meaning about? Well, you know, I think it's pretty fabulous, because let's say that you're Angela and you're navigating PCC and you're moving, right? But sometimes you feel like you're at it alone. So these are all mujeres, these are some good brothers who have been navigating up the ladder. They're deans, they're vice presidents, some are even presidents of a whole college, but they feel so alone on their campus.
Mm.
And then they found their comadre, they found their compadre from throughout the state. Imagine 111 colleges in one space, and they're strategizing. They're like, how do we do this together? Because, you know, if Angela and Cesar get together, we're stronger.
Yeah.
If all the colegas get together, we're stronger.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that they're making history. And I feel lucky enough that they brought me.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen you. I'm so happy that you're here. But when you opened it up at Colegas, people started crying. People started clapping. It was standing room only. And I don't know if that was medicine for you.
Oh, it was.
But I just saw you really smile for a moment. But like, what was that like for you being here at Colegas and sharing your palabra? Because you share it a lot, but every time can be a little different.
Yeah, this time was different. It felt like I was calm. Well, I was also, you were there in front of me. And for me, you are a person that's like solid. So like, if I was too nervous, I could just look at you, which I did. But then I just felt like calm to do what I had to do for once, when I usually always feel very nervous and like my breath is like shallow. But I had taken deep breaths, and we did like that meditation right before with everyone in the room, and it was like I felt everyone looking at me with like love. So I felt like they wanted me to succeed. And I know that's typically true, they don't invite me so I can fail, you know, but this just felt different, and I think that it calmed me, and it gave me, medicine. It really, like, I went off the stage, instead of feeling drained like I sometimes do, I felt, like, full, like, empowered and very, I don't know, motivated, where I have been not feeling motivated lately, so that was a really important moment for me. And then when everybody stood up, I was just, like, it's hard to intake those moments of, like, I guess, praise or love for me. So, but then to have the woman who came up and just like told me, look at the people, look what they're doing. And it was a moment that was really special to me. I won't forget that.
Mm. And you know, the woman that did that, first ever Latina president of an entire college, Berkeley City College. This is Doctora Garcia.
Yes.
I can't wait for her to hear this. I can't wait for Colegas to hear this. There was some pieces right off the bat, as you're remembering your father, but honoring the Chicano movement. You know, now 50, 60 years later, it seems like people don't even want to use that word anymore in some spaces, the word Chicano.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you brought a kind of medicine. And if I had to guess, I'm not an organizer of this conference, but I think they invited you because they needed that fire. What I struggle with is, if they invite us to bring fire and ours is dim, what the heck do we do?
Yeah.
Because this poem has a life of its own. Chingona Fire now is an anthem for a lot of people. You know, you met a mujer who literally wanted to come to meet you and what that poem meant to her. But sometimes we're not feeling our own fire.
Mm-hmm.
or it's just hella dim, or if they only knew what last night was like. I show up today, it all sounds good or whatever, but you don't know our struggles. You've got me thinking a lot about that. You know, that weird duality of like trying to bring fire and then feeling even burned or just in pain or low or burned out.
Yeah. I think like when we were talking yesterday, what was the theme that you mentioned? Because that whatever you said yesterday was like on point. What was it?
Well, I was hearing you talk about, because I was asking you, have you been doing writing? And you were telling me about this powerful poem that you're doing, centering the reality of anti-blackness, right? And you're about to finish that poem. And something stops us for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then we started talking about some hardships that we have. And I think the word that came was the pit, when we're in a pit.
Yeah.
And I kind, to be honest with you, I kind of didn't want to talk about it. I will. Because then I was like, what am I going to give oxygen to? But I know that your listeners appreciate your realness, because sometimes you show up when you're not feeling it. And that's rare, because other folks come really polished, right? It's got to be perfect. It's always got to be empowering.
Yeah.
Well, what happens when there's no baterías?
Yeah.
So it's that pit that sometimes we, I don't know where you live when you're at the pit, but even though I have a family, I live alone.
Yeah.
I live alone in that pit sometimes.
And when I'm in that, I'm completely alone. And what's worse is that I isolate even further. I already live alone, and my mom lives in Texas. My family's in Texas. And so I have friends here, and I have a sister who lives in Valencia. But I, for whatever reason, when I get like that, because to me, sometimes I think that's who they want. The person that was on that stage that can empower everybody, make everybody feel good and strong, and my voice and all that. But I don't know how well they will receive me when I'm not that. So I isolate until I can charge my battery enough to be that person again, and then I come back out. And so I feel like I will, it's like, when you're alone, I know that I learned from doing DBT class. Remember, I think I told you about that before the pandemic started. I was trying to do this DBT class, which is like dialectical behavioral therapy for people that struggle with bipolar, borderline, all types of things. But there's this thing called opposite action that you learn. And when you're struggling, and when you're in this pit that we're talking about, this pit of despair, this pit of loneliness, this pit of darkness, there's no other way to get out of it than to do the absolute opposite thing of the thing you want to do. So if you want to isolate, there's no other option other than you have to call someone and go do something. You have to. There's no way to get out of it. And that push, that little like force, that's the thing that changes it, changes you. You know, that willingness to make yourself uncomfortable in the moment, because you know that in the long run, it's gonna heal you. So to do that opposite action for me has been really difficult, but I have been trying. And for me, it's difficult to reach out to somebody when I'm like struggling and when I'm in a dark place. Because I feel like what I said, like, I think they would rather have that version of me.
Fully and, put together,
yeah.
Fully empowering. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not crying, not like questioning. Because you know what's so interesting is that everybody compliments. We walked up and down this damn hallway getting compliments. And it's like sometimes they don't make it in.
No.
They just hit me and bounce off.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to internalize the compliments. So it's like, yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I walk in and look in the mirror and I focus on the damn line that I messed up. And I'm like, but today feels different. And I think it's partly because you're here and also because of the love that was in the room that I don't know, it felt like family, even though it wasn't, you know, well, I guess it was. But yeah, when you're in that pit, how do you get out?
Well, I just want to affirm what I'm learning from you. I had never heard of that that's saying the opposite activity.
Opposite action.
Opposite action. And I think what I'm realizing in this conversation is that I know a couple of things. I know you know hella things. But something is blocking, like I have an awareness of how to get out of the pit. Mm-hmm. I even give advice to others. Mm-hmm. People come to me. People come to you. Mm-hmm. They listen to your podcast. But something is happening in my brain and in my heart where I have an awareness of what to do. And I just, now I'm going to look up opposite action. I'm going to look that up. But I have aware it somewhere in my mind. But when I'm in a funk, but when I'm in pain, but when I'm in a place that's really difficult, something gets disconnected from my brain to my heart, yeah, and to the other part of my mind that dreams, that envisions. And it's like I get all this cobwebs and fog and I can't see ish. Nothing. And then I don't know how to ask for help. Yeah. I don't know if it's the machista in me because I've been raised as a male to not ask for help, or somehow you gotta suck it up and do it. I don't know if that's, and I never like to tell people that I have a machista side. I don't think I do, but that's hella my blind spots. Mm-hmm. But to be honest with you, when I'm by myself, I don't call nobody, I don't text nobody, I don't let people know. I just eat. Mm-hmm. I eat. And I don't eat because I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. I eat because I wanna numb. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I've learned to believe it's my comfort. Mm-hmm. Did I ever tell you? I don't think we've ever talked about this. And by the way, I have to affirm that when I met you in Texas at a conference, and then we were able, you were nice enough to come all the way to Oakland, California, and do a homies dinner. And then we got to connect another time at Sierra College. It's been limited moments that we've had together, but there's a power when I think kindred spirits unite. Mm-hmm. And I felt that today because I do feel stronger with you. But I think when I'm at my pit, I forget my peoples.
Yeah.
I forget my ancestors. I forget the wisdom, mm-hmm, right? And where am I going with this? Because I don't want to lose this train of thought. Where was I, Angela? I'm trying to remember.
You give advice to other people who are in the pit, and so do I, but it's like when we're in it, it's like the advice almost doesn't even
come out. Have we ever talked about this immune system that we have that protects us, que se llama immunity to change?
No.
Oh, man. So I went off, so I went to school to learn something, and I think they made me dumber.
Period.
Same. But there was one tool they gave me, because you asked me about the pit, that sort of helps a little. And what I learned is that I have an immunity system that protects me. That's just fancy language for I got something inside that takes care of me. Mm-hmm. And then what they said is, let's say you want to accomplish something new. One of the things I want to accomplish is I want to lose like 50 pounds. That's a lot, I know. I want to lose some weight. But it has to be a goal that I haven't achieved yet. It's going to take me a little while to explain it, but I think it's powerful. So I write down my goal. My goal is I want to lose weight. But it has to be a goal I'm not achieving. Mm. And in the second column where I'm writing this down in my journal, what am I doing instead of meeting my goal? I have a gym membership. I don't use it.
Yeah.
I make excuses. I eat to numb the pain. I start something but stop it. I'll start some yoga or something, right? Yeah. And then I got all the stuff. I got the yoga mat.
Yeah.
And it's a wrap. It's just collecting dust. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in the third column, they say, don't judge yourself, but find out why you're doing the column two behaviors. Mm-hmm. And if my jefita listens to this, we've worked this through when I try to kill myself. When she found me 5150 in the hospital. And for the other people who this puts on blast, it is what it is. When I was 5 years old, my mother left me in Mexico to come to the U.S. And I had a family member, a tía, who became kind of like a mother figure. But I didn't know what nurturing really meant in this context. So she starts sleeping with me. but I don't mean in a nice way. Mm. And I'm five. Mm. And this happens for a year. And I'm being touched, but it ain't spiritually. Mm-hmm. And I'm five. And as I get older and I'm a teenager, I'm afraid of intimate relations because it triggers that moment. And I used to be a cute-ass kid, Angela. When I was five, I was a cute-ass kid, and I was a cute teenager. But what I realized, Angela, is that the fatter I get, the less eyes I get on me, like my tia. And so here's the aha moment, is that I'm never going to lose the weight. The reason I'm never going to lose the weight is because gaining weight protects me from the gaze. There's a gaze that my tia gave me that I never want. I go through these hallways and I don't look at women. I duck down. I lower the gaze. I don't want to be seen. Mm. It, the fatter I get, the more invisible I get. Mm. Like you don't even fucking see me no more. Like, I gain enough weight where I can disappear, wow. but I'm safe.
Yeah.
I'm safe. You ain't going to funks with me. You're not going to think of me as a physical being, and I'm protected. Mm-hmm. That is your immunity system. So I have a badass immunity system that's protecting me from ever getting violated or ever being seen in a negative way. So I'm never going to change. And then there's a fourth column, Angela. They ask, what's your dreaded image of yourself? And I'm like, shit. In this case, I have a lot of dreaded images because my dad left when I was two. My mom left to the U.S. when I was five. A partner that I had for a long time eventually bounced. I have a dreaded image that I'm not worthy of love. Mm-hmm. I have a dreaded image that I should be abandoned because everybody that meant something did. So if I don't have that feeling of like I really value and I really matter, it makes sense why I keep eating. I eat to take care of the numbness, but I eat to protect myself from the gaze of women.
Yeah.
And then I also eat because my self-worth is shot. So there's a fifth column, though. We're not trying to keep people down.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to stop. Is this immunity to change system wants us to challenge the dreaded image. Are you really unworthy of love?
Yeah.
Like, you really think that Quetzali doesn't love you, your daughter who's 11, mm-hmm. and that you don't deserve love. Then you start to do mini tests to work on that dreaded image. But here's the thing, Angela, is that I know all of these things. In my head, mm-hmm. I give advice. I talk about immunity to change. But when I'm in the pit, it's like there's a blockage and I forget everything. Totally. And then I just go into a sadness. And then I love going to the next level. So sadness becomes depression. Depression becomes ideation. Like, it seems like I'm never cool with the little things.
Yeah.
I go hard or go
all
home.
The way.
So then I go hard in the pit.
Yeah.
What about you? Like, as you hear all of this stuff, what's coming up for you?
Well, first, that's a lot. You shared, thank you for sharing that. That's
and,
a lot.
And I don't know where it's going to land in the universe.
Yeah.
Because the tia's still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's coming up for me is I was trying to, I relate to the feelings of unworthiness so much, like so much. And so did you learn that in therapy, or how did you learn that thing?
No, you know, it was in a class. And I used to doze off in a lot of my college classes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I think it caught me because they used the example of losing weight. Mm-hmm. And then I've tried diets and gyms. Now I don't eat meat no more. I've tried a lot of things. But why am I stuck?
Yeah.
And then when they walked me through that thing, it was in a class.
Yeah.
But then I didn't know how to use the tool. So I've been trying to learn how to use that tool.
Yeah, so you're not losing weight because it has nothing to do with your body. And it's mm-hmm. everything to do with your heart and your mind. And mm-hmm. so it's a physical manifestation of the unhealed wounds that you carry because of your tia. And like, whew, it's a lot. And I think that when we carry around that heaviness, it's like in our backpack, you know, the backpack you talk about, but I think our heart and our mind carries a backpack too. And it's like it weighs us down. And if we never take the stuff out of the backpack, it's like sometimes we have to rest. And in that rest is the depression. And so the only way to, I think, I don't know if it's called stopping the depression or the only way to get a hold of it is to start taking out stuff from the backpack and see what's in there, you know, and then it becomes lighter. And I think that when we get up there and we do our thing and we're all praised and everybody tells us, it's like it's almost the antithesis, I don't know if that's the word, of not feeling worthy. It's like, I feel like sometimes that's why I get up there. It's like, because I can't get my worthiness from myself or from my own. So it's like I seek it by going up there.
That's deep.
And that has always been my thing. Like growing up, it was like, it was my mom. It was always trying to get her attention. And I noticed that getting her attention, she would come to the school, whatever, assemblies or whatever, if I got an award. That's how it started. So when I get the attention, it's like, oh, okay, so this works. So I'm gonna keep doing this. Doesn't work because it's not, there's been no award that I've gotten that has ever given me the feeling of just having my mom's attention. That's what I'm aiming for. But you know, things like it, there's a lot of pain there. But like anything from winning,
you just want some big old award.
Yeah. And it's like, I post nothing about it. I didn't, because honestly, when I left, and it was the worst feeling because I wanted to be there so bad. Like I my mom didn't come, but I had some other people that did come. And I was trying so hard to be gracious and focus on that, which I was. And I think I conveyed that really well, but I was hiding some pain. Mm. Like I left and I just felt so like, man, like the awards just keep getting bigger and she still won't come.
Mm.
And so it's like, I think all this stuff is like related, like the stuff we our art, our what you put into the world, it's like we're getting validation, even though what we're putting into the world is important, and I know that and I acknowledge that, because it's a conscious decision to do so. Because the unworthiness, I think, it could lead you to get attention like the way we get attention, where we get it by standing on stage and sharing messages, or it can go the opposite direction and you could get attention for other things that are a lot less healthy. And so I feel like in that way, our ancestors have guided us because we're messengers, definitely. And so they've given us that gift, but it's like you got your gift, but you also got what it cost you.
Mm.
And I think that the pit and the stuff, I think it's like, I don't know if we are paying for the gift that we were given. I don't know what it is, but that sadness just doesn't seem to like go away when you're saying like the disconnect between the mind and the heart, like when you're giving that advice, but you can't take it or you can't follow your own advice. It's like, you feel like no one really knows me because this is the person I show, but this is the person I am. And I won't come back outside until I'm that person again. So it's like, you protect yourself to keep the bad out, but you also keep the good out. And that's where I'm at, is like trying to do the opposite action of wanting so badly to isolate and to be alone, even though what I desperately need and want is connection. My illness or whatever you want to call it, my trauma or anything like that, it will make me go for it. Like, I think your depression likes you to be sad. Like, it's like,
sure.
Yes, she's back. And yeah. I got her this time. Let's see how long I can make it last. And then there's me. Okay, no, 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 no. I'm going out for a hike. So not today, bitch. And then I'll go my hike and it'll calm down a little bit. Mm. I'll come home and I'll be able to get through the night. But when I feel it coming, I try to do the opposite action of, I want to just go get in bed. And I know that if I do get in bed, I know what's waiting for me. So I'm like, fuck, I gotta do the opposite action. And nature has like been a big part of my medicine for me. And it has like given me so much comfort. But I think that we've talked a lot about the pit and I don't want us to stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we leave though, you just gave me a really painful mirror to look at, because I'm learning a lot as I'm listening to you. And I think about, why do I share what I share on stage? I think a part of it, yes, I want to share history. Yes, I think we come from empowering cultures, and yes, these matter. But as you were talking about things we seek, I've always sought attention. I've always wondered why my father never held me. You know, and I love my mother, and we have a really good relationship now, but I blamed her for leaving me in Mexico. I shouldn't have. It's just I was five. I didn't understand why she was coming to another country as an immigrant undocumented, yeah. So I blamed her for hella long.
You're just a kid.
And then when we reconnected, I never really reconnected because she had remarried. So I think I've always been longing in a similar sense of like, Dad, see me. Mom, see me. And mom would come from 7 days a week working if it was a big deal something. Mm-hmm. So it always had to be a big deal something.
Yeah, if it's not a big deal, she can't take off work. That was right. How it was.
But the other part of it is I'm very judgmental about our relatives on social media seeking attention a different way. Mm-hmm. I'm hella judgmental. Mm-hmm. And what I just realized is I am them.
We're just on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, but no one had dropped it the way you did. So I was like, I'm judging my sisters and brothers who are showing their bodies, who are doing this, who are doing that. They're seeking something.
The same thing we are.
I'm seeking it this way. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, I don't know what to do with this mirror, Angela.
And sometimes I think like it's even a worse way because it's like at least our brothers and sisters are not pretending to be positive.
Yeah.
And then but then there is that's so real too though.
Yeah.
Like I don't get up there and say I couldn't do it. I wouldn't get up there and say a lie or say something that's not me. So that is me, but this is also me. And so it's like the biggest part of I think my journey is to integrate the dark and the light together to fully become what I'm supposed to be. But in the process, it's just like brutal sometimes.
Mm. You know, I've been studying comedians a lot, and I've been seeing comedian documentaries, and that's been feeding my spirit. Mm-hmm. And you know, they live for 5 to 8 minutes of their moment, and then I've been seeing their lives as like really, really troubled. Mm-hmm. And I found a mirror there. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm hearing you say is that we really have to curar that herida. We really have to heal that longing wound. And I've said this before because the way I've understood it from my mom is like the only person I needed was my mom. And then they cut the umbilical cord. Mm-hmm. And then when they cut it, that represents that you can now breathe on your own. And then you start to learn to walk, to take care of yourself, right? All that. But I'm still stuck. I don't know what age you are in. I'm still 5. Mm. Now, I'm almost 50.
Yeah.
But there's still 5-year-old Cesar that is longing for dad to come back. Dude already committed suicide. Dude's gone. But I'm still waiting for dad. In my subconscious, mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for that moment. And I think what I'm realizing is I got to let dad go. Mm-hmm. And I got to let that longing go. What helps me, and this really does help me to get out of my pit, is it's 2 a.m. And I mentioned this when I was on stage. It's 2 a.m. and I'm starting to freak out or the thoughts are coming. Mm-hmm. And then I really think about my abuelita because my abuelita is a badass. Droopy arms. She did mindfulness, but we didn't call it that. She would whistle when there was arguments at home. Mm. And I didn't know she was being mindful. She's just a whistler. Or she would sing songs in Spanish. And my grandma, I could come home loaded. I could come home hella drunk. She still hugged me. Like, I was always enough for my grandma. Mm. And my grandma would say things like, mijo, cuídate. Ponte un suéter. You know, take care of yourself. Put a sweater on. And so when I'm in my lowest, I just have to remember my grandma. And then she'll be like, mijo, it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
And then my mom does show up. And then my mom says, why do you think I work so hard? Right? And then my partner shows up. And then my kids show up. And then my friends show up. But I don't know why it's so hard for me to call on them when everything seems really dark and I can't see.
Yeah.
But for me, it's remembering. And the way I do it is with guided meditation. So I do my own meditations for myself now. I was doing them for others,
yeah.
And I stopped. I completely stopped. Now I'm only doing them for myself. So at home, it's 2 a.m, and then I'll take a deep breath, and then I'll be like, Cesar, what is keeping you up at night? Name it right now. And then I start to name it quietly. Take a deep breath. Cesar, what do you need from the Great Spirit? Name it right now. And then I name it. Cesar, Abuelita wants to visit. And by the time I say that, Angela, I'm flooding. There's tears running down my face because she loved me so damn much. And she's watching me in the pit.
Yeah.
She's the one that always, like, there's this invisible hand that pulls me out.
How it hurts her. You know how it hurts her to see you like that. There's also something that, like, I think is, like, part of the larger conversation lately with my generation, which is, like, inner child work.
What's that?
Inner child work is you're talking about the five-year-old. And the inner child work is work that you do by yourself to heal your inner child. And so there are things that you can do, but what has worked for me the most is mothering myself.
Hmm.
So, like, when I start to get bad, when I'm still in a place where I still have the capacity to do this, I mean, I talk out loud to myself all the time, like, as though I'm a mother getting my kid ready for whatever I have to do. Like, I'm like, okay, Angela, put on your shoes. And I mean, like, my roommate probably is like, what the fuck? Like, I swear, because I have to do it. Yeah. Like, I have to do it or else my mind will go somewhere else and then I would have forgot this or whatever. And so I will put out my clothes when I'm doing stuff for myself that takes care of me. That's mothering myself. So if I make sure that I eat breakfast in the morning, the same way I would want my mother to do for me, or the same thing I would do for a kid, that's mine. And when I feed myself healthy things, I will tell myself, I'm giving you this because I love you, like a green juice or like whatever it is. And other things to connect with your inner child, I taught a workshop about it. It's like, one thing you can do is like, now you're an adult. There's a lot of things you were a kid and you didn't get to do, you know, like going to the movies and actually not having to bring in stuff, but buying yourself stuff at the thing, you know, and being like, I'm going to get a Slurpee and some M&Ms. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just stuff that you can remember that you have complete control over, that you can redo stuff that you feel like you didn't get to do before.
Wow.
You can play.
And that does something for you?
It does. I mean, it's the only thing that has gotten me through, like, being alone in my own place for the first time. Like, it got me here today because I needed to make sure that I got up on time. And when five o'clock came and I was like, fuck, man, I gotta wake up. I'm like, oh, no, 15 more minutes. I was like, no, Angela, 15 more minutes is 15 less minutes for you to get ready. And you need those minutes because if you don't get there early, you're going to be frazzled. You're going to be, like, chaotic. And so the mother in me that I'm mothering myself knows best. It's like you have it in you already. And so that's, I found a lot of healing with doing that. Although my mom is still alive. And so, but it's hard because my mom is still alive. And I, no matter what I could do, I still won't be able to get that from her because she doesn't have it to give.
Mm.
And so I have a picture of myself as a kid. I'm 5 years old in this picture too. And it just so happens that I have a little picture of my mom when she was 5 years old. And I put it there so that when I'm thinking about this stuff and it's painful and it's hard, like, I think it's not my mom that's hurting me. It's that little girl is hurting that little girl.
Mm.
So it's like, if you think about your parents as children, it kind of like helps to frame it in a way where you're able to come to terms with what you didn't get and what you now have to give to yourself by mothering yourself in whatever way that looks like for you. Giving yourself pep talks before things. Like, I went in the bathroom before and I was like, you can do this. You could do this, like, out loud, because I didn't get that. And so I have to find a way to give it to myself. Because that validation and all the getting up on stage and all that stuff, it's like, she's not here. She's not going to be here. So what is left? What is left for me to do? I can either live in the pit and just only focus on the fact that she's not here, or I can, like, live my life. Like, I want to be alive. I don't want to be alive, but just existing. Like, I want to be alive and experience life. And I purposely didn't, like, smoke today. And, like, I didn't because I'm trying to connect fully with the moments that I'm in. Whereas before, you know, it was harder for me to do that. But, yeah, that's inner child work is, like, a big part of our vocabulary right now in, like, in my generation, because we're all more, like, millennials, I think, are more open to going to therapy. They're more, like, open to the fact that we need, you know, our hearts and minds need help and healing. And we can get that in different ways by giving it to ourselves. But inner child work is it's probably, it's where, she, it's, I think it's where everyone should start, you know? Because it's, like, that person, when you're in the pit, it's not you, Cesar, 50, how old are you?
Yeah, almost 50.
Almost 50. If that's not, who's in the pit is the kid. That's why it feels so hard to get out. Because you're a little kid. And so the mothering yourself has been really helpful for me.
It's heavy because I've never humanized my dad the way you've humanized my dad by humanizing your mom. Never, never have I thought about fathering myself, ever. Because I finally, I think, came to terms with dude's gone. Respect moms and really respect grandma, because you weren't abandoned. Because when you tell your story and you say your dad left and your mom left, you're ignoring grandma as part of the story. So the way I thought I was taking care of myself is grandma got me, so I got me. And then where I find life, I really find life in service of others. I really find life in community work. I really find life in speaking out. Like, this ain't a game for me. It's not a performance. But that doesn't heal some childhood wounds. It's part of me. But what you're triggering for me is, like, you mean I could dad myself? And there's hella people that have, like, serious parental issues. And a lot of people have daddy issues. And I've never heard of that concept of, like, I could be an awesome dad to myself, pretending to be my dad. I think the reason I probably haven't is because I know there's going to be a lot of pain and tears when I'm in the moment of, like, Cesar, let's go play catch. You know, Cesar, let's go to the movies. Yeah. Cesar, I'm going to teach you how to drive. And all of these things I didn't get, I'm going to give to myself. But in order to open that up, I see the floodgates coming at every single one of those moments. So I think what I have to do is have a little bit more of esteem that moment, like a little bit more bravery in that moment. So when the floodgates come, it's okay. Because when I'm not ready, and sometimes you're never ready, but when I'm not ready, it gets real bad for me. So then I think what I'm going to try to do, listening to this, is I am going to try to father myself. Maybe the next time we talk, we'll talk about that. But I'm going to start to have a conversation with myself as if my dad was awesome. And where you really messed me up is now you're asking me to find a 5-year-old picture of my dad. I've never thought of him as a child. I've just thought of him as an asshole because he left us. Never, never, never did I think he was a kid, but he had to have been. That's like heavy. You're dropping truth bombs. So I hope the folks that are listening, if you're going through stuff like this and you're my age and you haven't heard of inner child work, y'all will look that up, because there isn't one answer. There's hell of them. And it's kind of us finding the many medicines that work for us.
That's a big one.
And in different moments.
Our, like, pain is, like, it's so big, but that's also kind of a good thing because that means that there's, like, a lot of different points of entry. So you could come in at any door, you know, like, you want to start with shadow work. You want to start with inner child work. You want to start with like any branch of the tree of healing, you know, you can start with any branch. And have you heard of shadow work?
Only very little. Don't know too much about it.
Well, briefly, shadow work is like, so like, I can be very self-centered. I can also be very, I can be very judgmental of people for being judgmental, which is like weird. It's like the parts of your personality that are in the shadow that are in the parts that you don't want people to see about you.
Oh, dang.
So it's the parts that you hide, or the parts that you would rather, you would be so embarrassed if someone heard you, you know, whatever, speak about these people in this way where it's judgmental, but you don't want to be judged. Or it's the parts of your personality that are in the shadow. And so part of shadow work is like, well, there's a lot of different, again, points of entry with that. But the way that I have like kind of started to work on it is like, when my shadow comes up, like not trying so much to hide it anymore and just letting it, because the integration is the goal. Like your shadow, your inner child, like if we can get all those things to go together. But most of the time what's happening when there's a problem or a conflict, we're reacting either from our shadow, from our inner child, from our unhealed wounds of our mother, you know, wound. So it's like when we integrate all those things, that's when we will reach a point of like feeling healthy or being able to like handle what life throws at us, life on life's terms, as they would say in NA. But yeah, so that's a little bit about shadow work.
I had not heard that, and I think that I got a lot of places I want to hang out. I want to hang out in my shadow and understand it and just check it out. And I think what will help is if I don't judge it and not judge it, but see it. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, that's, you can't, when you're doing shadow work, you can't judge what comes up or what you discover, because it'll just go back to the shadow. You'll just your mind will subconsciously just hide it again because you judged yourself for it. So the hard work is facing the things about yourself that you just hope no one ever sees.
Now where I'm listening to you, I'm learning about shadow work, I'm learning about the inner child work, I'm learning about mothering or fathering myself. And then what I'm wondering is, when does it disconnect for you? Because I'm like, sure, Angela, you got this figured out.
Yeah, sounds like it, huh?
Like, so mentally, you have this awareness of the healing journey, and you do workshops, and it's so powerful. And then we still end up in the pit.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah. I think it can be triggered by, like, my last one was triggered by a guy that I've been, like, on and off with forever, coming over and staying for less than 20 minutes, and me feeling, I can't even describe the level of worthlessness that I felt. Like, just, I couldn't believe that I allowed him to come back, but then on top of that, he left after sex, like immediately. And it was, I mean, it triggered something so bad that that's what made me stop doing the podcast. Oh, I haven't admitted this, but that's what like made me lose motivation for the podcast. And like, if that's what really, I mean, I called the suicide hotline because primarily I could have called a friend, but because of how embarrassed I was of the fact that I let him come over anyway, like, that would be, I would have to have gotten over that embarrassment to even tell. You know, like, whoever's listening, they're gonna find out right now. Like, so when I did reach out to a friend, I still wasn't brave enough to tell her why I was upset, but I did sit with her and she sat there and cried with me. And even without knowing what it was, because I could not bring myself to, I don't want people to be disappointed in me. And so I didn't want her to, which I'm sure she wouldn't. She would have understood. She would have loved me through it. But it was just, part of my shadow is pride. It's a huge, pride is a big part of my shadow, and ego. And like, and because I always say I want to practice what I preach. And so when I don't want people to know about the times that I don't.
Yeah.
Because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And so that trick, so it's like certain things will trigger it. And I told you when we were at homies, or homeboy, I told you that, you know, like when I fall off the bike, you know, like I fall off, most people just get back on the bike and keep riding, but like my whole bike falls apart. Like I have to rebuild the bike and then build up the energy to get back on it and then get back on it and ride it, you know? So it's like, I feel like my process to get back to where this person that's on stage, to get back there, it's like a longer process for me. And so I guess the question was how do I get there to those pits? It's like, it really depends on the trigger, you know? Like, it could, my, like, we got abandonment issues and stuff like that, but that was the, that was the ultimate, like, because it was involving sex and not just emotions, because emotions are hard enough, you know? But then when you add that, the, I felt like, whatever dignity or self-worth I had, he took it when he left. It was, that's what it felt like. It, and I sat in my closet and I just like cried so bad. And that had triggered like the next months of just feeling bad. But it can be, you know, this thing like with the award. It's like in times where I should be happy, I'm sad. Mm. And I hate that about myself. Mm. But it's hard to come back, but I always come back. And when I do have ideations as well of you know, suicide or just mine, for me, is mostly just not wanting to be here. It's going to sleep and never waking up again. Mm. That's my, because I don't necessarily have a plan or anything like that, because I don't want to hurt. But I sometimes would just be like, it would just be so much easier if I could just go to sleep and never wake up. But when that happens, there's still what I really like about myself and what I think my dad put in me is a little candle of hope, and it cannot be blown out. It's there even when I'm in the pit. Mm. And that's what stops me from taking my life or trying to hurt myself, because it's like, I can see it, but it's far, far away. But I can always see it. And so I can't speak to those people who don't, or who feel like they can't see that light, but I need them to know that it's there. Mm. It's, and what it is just hope. It's just hope that maybe this moment that I'm in, this pit that I'm in, it's hope that it can be different, that it can change, that it might feel like it's so far away, but I know that there's something that I'm here to do and I haven't done it yet. Mm. So I gotta stay long enough at least for that. And then, so that candle is like, my dad would say, like, when whatever happens, just don't lose hope. Because when you lose your hope, that's when you lose everything. Hmm. Yeah.
I just want to thank you, because there's a lot of heaviness in the room. And what people didn't see, because they're listening, is that as I was sharing heaviness, you lit some sage to help me with my heaviness. And then I just lit sage now, because I don't know where all the courage comes from for you to name everything you just named.
Yeah.
And the vulnerability, right? And we hear the Dr. Brené Brown's talking about, okay, vulnerability is a sign of courage. That sounds really dope. Mm-hmm. But when you have to go there, and now you're taking some of your shadow self and having a conversation with me, and God knows who's listening, that's some heavy, heavy, heavy stuff. And so I want to just honor that. I also want to ask you, and I want to ask whoever's listening, not to carry our stuff.
Yeah.
So like if you're listening, mm-hmm. I hope you're lighting your medicines along the way, because Angela's plight is not yours to carry, mm-hmm. and Cesar's plight is not ours to carry. It might trigger some thoughts, but let us go.
Yeah.
And then what has helped me too is that I'll smudge after this, and then I've gotten really good at praying for people and praying for myself. Here's what I mean, is that after this, when you're not around, I'll be like, damn, Angela said this, this, and this, that's heavy. I wanna just send a prayer to Angela in a good way, but I cannot carry like everything I just heard, because I used to. Mm-hmm. And because like, I listen with my heart valve. I listen from here, I don't listen with my ears.
Yep.
And then I wanna do something to that, drink it away or numb it away or something. And I've realized you never asked me to carry your stuff. And so what I have to do next is, when no one's around, I got to pray. And like, Great Spirit, take care of Angela.
You know,
yeah, and then, but I can't carry her stuff. And I don't even want to carry mine that's not mine, right? Like, I have to figure out how to carry things differently. And when you mentioned your dad and that glimmer of hope, that light, you know what it made me think of? I got hella juiced, and I wanted to kind of, not close, but I wanted to go here. Part of why I'm in love with Lolita Lebron, part of why I get into our history, is because Like, I think about a Malcolm X. I think about a Harriet Tubman, who weren't perfect. They weren't superheroes. They farted. They had issues. They didn't want to get up. They probably make mistakes in their relationships, all kinds of whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they found a way out of no way. They kept their hope going. Mm-hmm. And I'm a student of hope. And I'm a student of agents of change. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm in the pit, I slap some Malcolm X. Yeah. I watch some badass documentary. Yeah. I research. Mm-hmm. And even if I'm binging, so I'll binge Netflix.
Yeah.
Or I'll binge something. But when I catch myself going into the pit, I binge empowerment.
Yes.
Like, I'll find something.
That's a huge cheat code.
Something.
That's
and it brings me back. Mm-hmm. It gets me out of that couch. And it's like, damn, look at what the people are doing in Vieques. Look at what's happening over here. Look at what's happening over there. And then all of a sudden, like, I start getting goosebumps. My body starts to change. And then before I know it, I'm up. I'm active.
Yeah.
However, what I'm realizing from this conversation is that that's part of it. I've never done shadow work. I haven't hung out with 5-year-old Cesar a lot. I'm barely unearthing him now, 45 years later.
Yeah.
So we're all on journeys. That's mine. So my next steps is realizing that. And I think that the next time I'm in the pit, I'm saying it for the folks listening so they don't get too scared. The next time I'm in the pit is know I got tools, know I got hope, know I got a couple of words of wisdom from the ancestors, and I'm gonna pull on it all.
Yeah.
And really, really lean on to all of that and lean on to this. And now I got new work to look up. So the next time we talk, I'm gonna be like, I've been shadow boxing.
Shadow boxing, you know? Period. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Oh my gosh, that's a great way to look at it. And it's because everything I just shared with you, I have not, and it's the same thing that it was when we first met. For whatever reason, I feel safe to share things with you. And it's, our friendship is medicine. And so it feels like, I took this as an opportunity to do a podcast, obviously, but I really wanted to say those things that are so hard for me to say, but I could say them to you because you will not feel any different about me. Like, and I feel that. And so it feels safe enough to share. And like, I just appreciate you so much. And I like, thank you for listening to me and holding this space and lighting sage and just being here with me because we both shared some heavy stuff, but I want us to go. Let's move into the light now.
Yeah.
Let's move into the light. I want to talk about something that's huge light in this world, which is all of the stuff going on at Homies.
Wow. You know, I, not that I totally forgot about that, but we've been in such a different place.
Yeah.
But I noticed just with you asking a different question, it triggered an excitement. Mm-hmm. It's grown. So when you came to visit us, we're in this little building next to a liquor store. You had it jam-packed. You came to a Homies dinner. We fed the community. You were super sick.
Oh,
like, you were not well. Like you were going through a really bad flu, a really bad gripa, and you still came out. And it was fire. And since that moment that you came to us, we got the space next door, and we call it a care center.
Yeah.
And that's a space where anybody can walk in. Or literally, we walk out and visit encampments, and we just show cariño, we just show love. Like, what do you need? What's going on? Can we be in support of anything? And we hear all kinds of stuff. Some mujeres run in because they're literally escaping the dude that's beating them up. And then it's figuring out, how do we have you disappear and reappear where you need to reappear?
Yeah.
So it's kind of the folks that are there at the care center, they're making medicine and they're making magic. Somebody's trying to come in, and so we'll see. But then we got some land.
Well, before we keep going, like, for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about,
or who might
be introduced to Cesar for the first time, he is one of the founders of Homies Empowerment. Can you share about Homies Empowerment and what it is? Cesar is the founder of one of the founders of Homies Empowerment in Oakland, California, East Oakland. So can you share a little bit of like a brief bio,
of course.
Tell them the updates.
Of course. So 15 years ago, I was a teacher in high school, and I saw a lot of youngsters join different organizations. And I always describe it this way. I'll be like, all right, tell me what I'm describing. So I'll talk about, you got to wear a certain color. You got to be loyal. You got to put in work. You got to sell product. And there's a ceremony to bring you in. And everybody thinks I'm describing gangs. And I'm always describing the Girl Scouts. Mm. Because the Girl Scouts, they got to sell that product. It's them sugar cookies. You got to push that sugar on the block.
Yeah.
And you got to wear a color. They're wearing some green, and I don't know what other colors they got. And there's a ceremony to bring them in. Mm-hmm. And so Girl Scouts get to be seen as something positive, and so are Boy Scouts. But I was watching youngsters find some sort of family in gangs. I was watching youngsters find a big brother, a big sister. And when all the after-school programs closed at 6, they weren't going to call the cops for protection. So it was actually homies from the block that protected them. I found some youngsters that found a sense of belonging, that they started tagging up their name, and now their name meant something. And so when I saw this, and I saw that we were losing a lot of young people to a lot of like societal violence, I was like, maybe gang prevention doesn't work. I've never seen it work, even in LA. I've never seen gang prevention actually work. So I was like, maybe we need gang enhancement. Maybe we need to grow the gangs bigger. And maybe the gang is not the problem. It might be what we're doing, or the lack of resources, right? Or lack of education from society. So then I thought, what if we created an organization that kind of looked like a gang? Had colors, was about that, but the outcomes were different. Mm-hmm. So then we started going, when youngsters jack a car, there's a high there. And so we started not jacking cars, but we started going on some joyrides. And then the youngsters hate to hike. Don't ever tell me we're gonna go on a 5-mile hike. But what we would do, it would be hella dark. And we're like, we're gonna go on a mission, y'all. And what we mean is, we're going in the dark. Not all of y'all gonna make it back, right? It's I don't even know if you're ready for it, but we're gonna walk in the dark. And they're like, I'm down. And all we were doing was a night hike. But we didn't call it that.
Yeah.
But what we were doing was experiencing other things and getting other highs that were simulating a joyride, that were simulating other experiences. And what we realized is you can transfer some of the things that are happening in gangs into a community culture.
Yeah.
And we started to do that. That was 13 years ago. And then all of a sudden the youngsters were like, Mr. C, man, I love this. And then we get to go chop wood when I'm hella mad. And then we get to go do a sweat lodge and this and that. And then you took us to the border and whoop-de-whoop. Could this be the school? But I got hella intimidated. I was like, a school? Us? How? And then we've been on this 13-year journey. In 11 months, we opened a real high school. Imagine.
Yes!
Imagine a high school where instead of a cop greeting you or a security officer, it's a grandma. And she is strapped. She got a chancla. So, but she also got big old droopy arms like mine and hugs you. Mijo, it's good to see you. Mija, you made it today. I'm happy. Grandma welcomes you, and grandma's in the class.
You already have the grandmas recruited?
Yeah.
I love
They recruit each other. And one of them is the first woman to join the Black Panther Party. Mm. Imagine that, grandma. Black and brown grandmas, badasses.
Yeah.
Imagine Chicano movement grandmas. Black Panther grandmas. Mm-hmm. How are you gonna act a fool with grandma around? And then we like learning our traditions, learning about healing, learning about our brain. Now you just added some new lessons. We're gonna do inner child work and shadow work when we're ready, all in due time. But it kept growing. And then all of a sudden, as new people came in, they had different dreams. Yolanda came in and she's out. I'm from Honduras and we need to grow our own food. Why? Because when you grow your own food, you control part of your destiny and you know what you're eating. So then we took over an abandoned lot and now we have a farm.
Yes.
And now we have a learning center and that care center and the freedom store. And so, but now what's kind of cool is that every single different building is a different classroom.
Yeah.
So we just need, we're trying to get a big old bus with hydraulics,
ah,
a sound system,
yes,
a breakfast bar. And we're just going to be cruising down the street in our neighborhood, going to the different classrooms. Sometimes the farm is your classroom. Sometimes under the bridge in encampments is your classroom.
Yeah.
Sometimes the care center. Sometimes the freedom store. Sometimes you're going to that ethnic studies class in college. All of these places are your classroom. Sometimes the backyard is the classroom. Sometimes the alley, they're all teachers. That's the high school, and we're opening in 11 months. I wish your listeners could champion it and support it.
Yes.
If they go to homieshighschool.org, that's our fancy website, they could champion it.
Yeah.
If they go to homiesempowerment.com, they could donate a dollar or donate some time or donate some curriculum. I'm trying to recruit you, Angela. I'm hoping.
I'm recruiting.
So y'all know this, but Angela has a book called Confessions of a Firework. And some of our young people read it when you brought it to Oakland. And they're like, this is phenomenal. So I'm recruiting you to think about our year one curriculum to unpack what we carry and being able to express ourselves. But anybody who's listening, who's like, I want to be part of that school and I got this to offer. We gave it a new name. Now it's the Freedom School.
Yes.
Because it's about us fighting for our freedom.
You know what? It's so beautiful. Every time you tell this story, it just like fills me up because I have worked in education for so long, and also I've been a student in education for so long, and what this is decolonized education, and it's reimagined, which oh my gosh, we need it. It's like what I'm looking forward to most is to see what they become, because the possibilities will be different, period, because the process is going to be different of how we school them. It's not subtractive schooling. It's additive schooling.
Mm.
And so it's not even the concept. It's take away the concept of public education at like period, and you've reimagined it. And this is a contribution to the community that will change the course of it will change the course of our experiences, you know, because what happens in schools, you talk about subtractive schooling, and what happens in the schools that we have now, it's like who you are is beaten out of you.
Yeah.
I mean, like, daily. I felt like when I was in college, I felt like I used to write poems. But then I would have to write essays, and it got to a point where I get penalized for not writing the essay in MLA format. And so I have to like translate my whole brilliance into MLA format, and it loses everything. And I felt like after I graduated college, it took me a while to find my voice again and to find my voice without the fucking police of white education or of higher education, and this like idea that you're not good enough as you are, but if you learn how to write in MLA format, or if you learn how to do it our way, that's the right way. But again, it's subtractive schooling. And so what you guys have done with Homies Empowerment and the Freedom School is just completely reimagined it and changed all of our lives. Without even like what's so exciting is we have no idea what they will do. And so it's like, I think the pathway to being activists or to being literally anything, it's opened up, because when they're in school, they won't be told that what they are is wrong, mm-hmm. or they won't be pressured to change. And I just think that's like the best contribution there could be.
Thank you for saying that. You know, in one of your poems, you were talking about the Chicano movement and your dad and activismo. And then you added some contemporary words where you were talking about they try to bury us. And I've been learning more about seed bombs, because we used to make sugar skulls for Dia de los Muertos. But I didn't know how much sugar is a toxin and messes us up, gets us diabetes and everything else. And sugar skull is actually a colonizer creation of a different way to do a skull with a seed bomb. And a seed bomb is just literally something that you plant on the ground and you don't know what's gonna grow. And I didn't know there's home grow plants, and they're called marigolds. So when I learned about marigolds, that's a home grow plant, because you plant marigolds wherever you want other plants protected.
Cempasúchil.
Yes, because the cempasúchil, what it does is it makes sure that no of these other like weeds or anything else messes with the growth of the other homegrown plants. So if you want your plants to grow, you plant marigolds, because that's the homegrown plants. They always have your back. And when you said that today, that, you know, they tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds, I didn't know we were marigolds. And now that I know that, who knows the kind of marigolds they're going to be?
Yeah.
But as long as we have our own back and then our people's back, it's just going to grow and blossom. And so really, really excited about where this is going.
Yeah. What else have you, I know you do lots of conferences and like, I went on your page and I seen like the Chola conference or something.
Yeah.
What was that?
This is an amazing mujer who reached out to Homies Empowerment and said, I'm a grant writer. I don't need no MLA, nothing. Mm-hmm. I can write. And then she's based out of Los Angeles. She was here yesterday at the conference. I can't wait for us to connect with her. And I'm sorry that I'm not recalling their name because I just met them. But then she's like, I'm organizing a Chola Scholar Conference.
Love
what?
You.
And I'm taking it to Colorado.
Yeah.
And all these scholars, all these Cholas who are coming into all of their wisdom from the block to the academia y lo que sea, it's honoring all of us. And I think you've always embodied that. Like, I don't know when you became unapologetic, but that's part of your Chingona Fire. So part of the Chingona Fire poem is a reclaiming, and I don't need to remind you of nothing, but there's a piece in your poem when you talk about the drinking of wine and having conversations with sisters about how dude did wrong. Right? And then I'm hearing you tell the story earlier, and I'm like, oh, do you deserve the Chingona Fire poem for yourself to reclaim it? Mm-hmm. Right? But I think that there's a real power when you can claim both or none. Like you say, I can be the scholar, I can be the hoe, I can be neither, but you don't judge me, right? I don't judge me. But how do I reclaim and be? And that's what that Chola conference is about.
Wow.
And so I'm hoping you'll have her on the podcast soon. And we're already putting that out there. Also, I just, Dolores Huerta, if you're listening, please, Dolores Huerta, you're an elder in our community and we love you. And Angela is waiting to talk to you. So to the Huerta family, if you're listening, to the Chavez family, if you're listening, it's beautiful. It would be an honor for you to come to Millennial Mija Podcast, waiting for Dolores Huerta.
You started manifesting that yesterday.
A ver qué pasa.
You started manifesting that yesterday. And every time I talk to you, I just like get a energy. Like I get filled with love and just like encouragement, because I see that you see me. And that's rare, you know? That's rare. I feel that it's rare to maybe be seen, but also see the person who's seeing you. And so that's really special to me. And so I always appreciate our conversations and just being here with you, and any like opportunities that we get to share the stage, I feel like we always rock the shit out of it every time we do it together.
Ay, hermana, thank you. I think what I'm learning new from you.
And we both got standing ovations.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That was powerful.
I think what's starting to happen little by little, and it happened a lot today, is that our shadows are starting to speak to each other too. And I didn't know that. I knew that's why I gravitated to your realness. But I think that what I'm starting to see is there's like 5-year-old Angela, 5-year-old Cesar, and then our shadow selves here. And they're all kind of dancing and figuring a lot of stuff out, and it's not easy. But I really appreciate you creating a space on this World Wide Web thing, because you never know who's listening.
Yeah.
And I hope they'll continue to tune in, because this is powerful.
Yeah. I am so grateful for the people who encourage me and who understand the pauses in between episodes, you know, and just know that it's not because I don't want to, and it's not because I don't appreciate the people that listen. I am struggling sometimes, and I literally fight my way from one episode to the next sometimes. And I need you guys to know that I love and appreciate you for it, because you could be anywhere in the world, but you're here with me right now, and that means a lot to me. And it and when I get messages like the one I got from Lorena, there's a woman here who had DM'd me before today for this conference and told me what my Chingona Fire poem meant to her. And it's like those moments where it reminds me that what I'm doing, it reminds me to, it makes me step out of me and reminds me that my words and my message and all that stuff that I have to offer is bigger than my fear, bigger than my depression, bigger than all the personal things that I'm going through, because of the impact that it has on other people. And that, like, that is what I come back to when I finally get from the pit to a place of gratitude. It's usually because someone sends me a message, or someone reminds me that I am important and what I have to share is important, because that's what we forget. That's where the disconnect happens, is when you forget your value, you know? And so it really means a lot to me, the people that listen to the podcast or share my videos or whatever, however you want to support me. I just want to say thank you, like, from the bottom of my heart. And thank you for listening to me and Cesar. And thanks for taking this journey from the pit to the light with us. We went there. And that's what I like about our conversations, is that we can both go there, but we can also come out of it. And we did together. So thank you.
Thank you as well. I just want to say one last thing.
Please.
Have you heard the dicho, Skoden? I'm feeling res dogs. I'm feeling reservation dogs.
I haven't seen it yet.
And these youngsters are constantly through the episodes mourning the suicide of one of their teenage friends. But when they're ready to move, because we're about to move up out of here and we're still in the conference, they'll be like, instead of let's go then, Skoden. And that's like their dicho. That's like their slang. And I just wanted to say that because, like, I started in the pit in this conversation. I went to your pit. We both got out. And I'm ready to move.
Yeah.
And so let's Skoden.
Let's go then. And meet some people and just get some more light and spread some more light. So thank you so much for being on the Millennial Mija podcast again. And you're family to me, and you always will be. And so thank you for everyone for listening. And I'll be back with the next episode as soon as I can. Love y'all.
Hello?
It's the motherfucking Millennial Mija podcast.